Week 135 of Brad is Branded Thoughts. And finally, Iowa gets a win. We get to talk about an Iowa victory. I'm joined by Alex Brada. And, you know, last week was difficult as I was sitting here recording, thinking about the opportunities Iowa had in those first two games. You know, you think about what happened in the opening loss to Purdue. Iowa loses that game 24-20. Allowed Horvath, their running back, to just get loose in the second half. Iowa looked tired. They weren't tackling well. No, they were missing some pieces. Had a couple linebackers out. Had Austin Schulte out on the defensive line, but they just didn't look good against the run in the second half. And then, of course, against Northwestern, they blow a 17-0 lead. Largely, the lead was built because of turnovers on Northwestern's part, but Iowa did cash in on those possessions. It's tough to recover from those types of losses. But, Alex, I said last week on the show that I thought Iowa, you know, after the Northwestern loss, I immediately thought this season's going to the toilets. And then I gave it a few days, and I started to become a lot more optimistic because I thought, okay, 0-2, I get it. Northwestern is better than a lot of people think. Purdue's undefeated right now. But with that being said, how disappointed were you after the 0-2 start?
I was definitely disappointed. I think this season is a bit of an outlier in terms of, you know, if that had happened in past seasons, it would be a different situation because we would have already had, you know, some tune-up games basically to get our guys into the flow. This year, you know, you're jumping right into the fray, really, into the Big Ten and kind of right into the fire because, you know, Iowa's had trouble with Northwestern, had trouble with Purdue. And the fact that it's not like they got blown out of those games. You know, in some ways, it's worse when you lose a close game just because it's more, I guess, disappointing in some ways. But if you look at it from a more detached perspective, I think it's actually not the worst start they've had. Northwestern, like you said, is better than people think. You know, now they're ranked now, and Purdue's not a bad team. So, you know, I don't think you can, when you factor in the fact that you got a brand new quarterback, I don't think you can really make too much of a determination yet. That was kind of my thought last week before this Michigan State game. And as of now, I'm feeling pretty good.
Let's be honest, though. The Purdue game was a game, and I talked about this on the show the week prior. That game was the reason that game hurts so much even now for me, and I think for a lot of fans, and I think it should hurt for Iowa players. Now, they can't dwell on it, but I think it should hurt is because that game was there for the taking. They were missing their head coach, who was also their offensive coordinator and play caller. They were missing their best player in Rondell Moore. They were missing their starting running back. And they were down. Iowa had the lead, seemed like the majority of that game, and found a way to lose it. And I think that's probably where most fans are became so down after the second week, because you already blew a game against Purdue. Iowa should have won that game. There's no question, given the circumstances, given the lead in the fourth quarter. And then, of course, the Northwestern game, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You're up 17-0 in the first half. You should win that ball game every time. Now, granted, that was early, and like we said, it was compounded by Northwestern errors. Here's my issue, and we will recap the Michigan State-Iowa game on Saturday, which was, of course, a tremendous game to be a Hawkeye fan for, and I think sort of ignited the fan base a little bit and gave people some those who were down. And I was down after the Northwestern game, but once I gave it a few days, I was becoming a lot more positive leading up into that Saturday kickoff. But here's what I'm still concerned with this Iowa team. And, I mean, I don't think this should become as a surprise to anybody. Nate Stanley was a 3-year starter at Iowa. We talked about up and down about how this offense had the opportunity to be historically good with perhaps the best wide receiving core that Kirk Ferentz has had since he's been at Iowa, even maybe back into the Hayden Fry days. I'm not an expert as far as Hayden's years at Iowa, but certainly this wide receiving core had a chance to be great. And then you add in a running back core, which I think now we definitely agree is one of the best in the Kirk Ferentz era, being that they have run the ball at least two of the 3 weeks in spectacular fashion, and they really didn't give him a chance in the second game. We'll talk about that. But I think people really thought that this offense had a chance to be great. And then you add in, of course, tight ends, Sam Laporte and Sean Beyer, who are playing great football. You got a couple draft picks, potential draft picks on the line, or maybe even three this coming year. And I think people were overlooking, including myself, overlooking the quarterback position. You look historically at Iowa teams, first-year quarterbacks typically play pretty well. They fit into the system and get their feet under them quickly. Here's the variable, though. Every other first-year quarterback at Iowa has had a spring practice leading up to their first year starting. Every other Iowa quarterback has had non-conference games leading into their first year starting. Spencer Petras has had neither. So I understand the struggles, but my concern at this point is, and I know people with rosy-colored glasses are only seeing the 49-7 win on Saturday against Michigan State, and I'm going to be devil's advocate here. I thought Spencer Petras played very poorly again. And I'll just my opinion, and I expressed this earlier in the week, I think his best performance thus far was week one against Purdue, and that's a concern to me. I didn't see anything on Saturday that gave me really any hope or positivity about Spencer at quarterback. I'm not saying he's not going to get better, but we're three games in here of an eight-game season, and I haven't seen a single mark of improvement from my naked eye looking at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I tend to agree. He hasn't looked sharp yet. He's been pretty much all over the place. You know, he's made passes, but a lot of the ones he's made have not been put in very good positions. And, you know, he's thrown a lot of passes behind guys and high and maybe putting too much on them that, you know, can lead to picks like we saw or whatever. So, yeah, he hasn't looked great yet. You know, it's just so early on, like you said, without having those tune-ups. You know, I'm willing to give him a little bit more slack. Obviously, it's a short season, and you can't waste too much time. But, you know, and the rest of the team pretty much carried him, you know, against Michigan State, which was more than enough. But now is the time, I think, where he has to start turning it around. I think, obviously, you're down in your overall record. You're down 1-2. But I think now is the time you really have to start tightening up the ship, and we'll see. I mean, if he were to start playing really well right now, it wouldn't honestly surprise me that much to have had three games where he just kind of looked out of sorts. So I'm hopeful for this week and next week that maybe we see a drastic improvement.
Well, let me tell you his completion percentage thus far. It's 54%. Okay. That is under what Nate Stanley did, I think, his freshman year. I'd have to look back. That's very comparable. And a lot of people like to compare the two. I think we're forgetting that Nate Stanley's second game as a starter was a four or five touchdown performance against Iowa State, where they won on the road. So I've heard a lot of people say, well, Nate Stanley had the same problems. Spencer Petras is throwing, first of all, he's not going through his progressions, okay? He's locking in on a single receiver and throwing it to him, whether they're open or not. And if you notice this, he didn't have a single pick on Saturday. He didn't have a single pick week one. But again, as you noted, the throw to Tyrone Tracy early in the game that goes off his hands, goes straight up in the air, and Brandon Smith catches that. And reporters asked Petras after the game, you know, they brought it up, and he kind of laughed about it. Listen, I'm sure Spencer Petras is a great kid, and I'm sure he's devoted to film and fixing mistakes. I wouldn't be laughing about that, because that's the same issue that reared its ugly head against Northwestern. It's throwing balls as by the way, I love who's the commentator, the quarterback, the tall guy that's been commentating for Iowa games the last two weeks on ESPN. It won't be the same this week because it's a Fox game, but not Brock Osweiler. I can't think of his name. Somebody help me out. But anyways, he used the term high and hot, and that's exactly what's happening. Every single throw is high and hot, high and hot, high and hot. And what that means is it's high, and it's got way too much fire behind it, and we've seen multiple receivers not be able to handle them. We saw Amir Smith-Marset drop a ball or two in the first game. We saw Sam Laporta drop a couple against Northwestern. Now we see Tyrone Tracy have problems with it. This is not a wide receiver problem. The receivers are playing fine right now. Amir Smith-Marset didn't play on Saturday because of the OWI earlier in the week. Brandon Smith only had three catches. It had the touchdown catch. Didn't need to really do much more because special teams and defense took care of the rest. But I just look at, and the running game, of course, but I just look at the receivers and the tight ends. I think Sean Beyer and Sam Laporta are playing their freaking tails off. And if you look back at tape, Sean Beyer is playing excellent football right now. And I guess I'm looking at this and I'm saying, again, I go back to the lack of improvement. I'm not seeing anything from game to game that would indicate to me that Spencer Petras is going to make a big jump this next game. I just don't know what, you know, to me, there should be baby steps, and I'm not seeing any baby steps. Now, maybe the coaching staff is. Maybe Ken O'Keefe as a quarterback's coach or Brian Ferentz as the offensive coordinator. Maybe they're seeing something on tape that gives them hope that, you know, this Friday against Minnesota, they can, you know, throw for 350 yards if he has to. Now, I sure hope they don't have to because Minnesota's run defense is atrocious. We'll talk about that. But I fear because, yes, he's throwing balls high and hot. He throws some behind his receivers. I think more the problem is he's throwing high. I mean, if you keep balls low, if they're – I don't remember Nate Stanley, but people keep saying, well, Nate Stanley had the same problems. I don't remember Nate Stanley throwing at a million miles per hour that high. Do you remember that at all? I don't remember that from his freshman year.
Not the high throws. He definitely would put too much on them, and sometimes he'd – throw them at their feet, which I guess is better.
That's better.
I don't know if it's really an indicator of that. I think with Petras, it just seems like he's been inaccurate in general, not just high. I mean, that's definitely been an issue. But
look at all the interceptions, though. Northwestern, and then that one should have been an interception on Saturday, and those were all high. And what happens when you throw high, it's not a matter of it's just high and it happens to get picked. It's a result of you throw high and it's that hard of a throw. Yeah, you're going to get deflections off your receiver's hands, and usually when the ball goes up, 75 to 80% of the time, that's going to end up in the arms of a defender, not what happened on Saturday with Brandon Smith coming up with it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm not a quarterback, but I do notice when I throw a football, it seems like if I try and put too much on it, that it does tend to come out early sometimes. I don't know if that's typical with an actual, you know, skilled guy like him, but maybe he just needs to take a little bit off. I mean, he needs to anyway, just receivers help, but maybe that would help fix the inaccuracy, you know, thrown high and whatnot.
Well, you notice that they didn't take until late. I think early in the fourth quarter, they maybe took a shot or two. I think one ended up in a pass interference, but he didn't take a single shot Saturday. Now you can say, well, they didn't need to. Okay. I mean, you look at Petras's numbers. Let's take a look at Spencer's numbers from Saturday. And I don't want to go over the numbers from the first week or the second week because they're all about the same, minus the turnovers week two. But if you look at Michigan State, let's click on this box score. Petras was 15 for 27, 167 yards, and one touchdown. Now, the problem here is you're going to look at that and say, well, they're dominated on the ground, which they did. Tyler Goodson, 113 yards, two touchdowns. Mekhi Sargent was tremendous. Ivory Kelly Martin was tremendous. The line blocked terrifically. But the problem is there's more than just statistics. And when you watch the game, you saw that he was not making reads. You can see, I mean, even from the naked eye from watching on television, you can see when Petras. Have you seen Petras make a single? I'm sure he has. I'm just saying, of course, using hyperbole from my fan's perspective. Have you seen Petras make, besides a check, he made lots of check downs against Northwestern. I don't know if you remember that. Just kept checking down, check down, check down, check down every single time. Okay, so he's checking down, but have you seen him make his first read, second read, third read, and then check down? I mean, it seems to be, okay, that's not open, I'm going to check to the running back every single time, or I'm just going to zero in, laser it across, and hope that it doesn't get picked. To me, he's not going through progressions, and you saw week two against Northwestern. I don't know if you remember seeing that highlight, and the commentators brought this out. I got to figure out who that guy is that did the game on Saturday, but anyways, really great commentator, former quarterback, I think for Connecticut or something. Anyways, he brought out how on that last drive, Iowa needed a field goal. They had Reganey wide open down the seam, and Petras rolled out of the pocket for no reason. He rolled in out of the pocket for no reason, never looked down the field, and ended up in an incomplete pass, and eventually it turned it over on downs. That's what I'm talking about. Those are the plays. He's not going through progressions, and I haven't. That's what I was watching for Saturday. I kept saying, okay, come on, make your first read, make your second read, make your third read. And it didn't matter what the score was, he wasn't doing that. And that's my concern at this point.
Do you happen to know how many times he's been sacked this season?
Not very many. I don't know exactly. Let's see. Team stats. I don't know if we're going to be able to get it from team stats here. Let's see. Oh, let's see. Let's go box score. Maybe we can get Michigan State. I don't know that Michigan State got to him.
I'm just wondering because maybe it's just an issue with his internal clock is off and he's not realizing that he does have a little bit more time. Maybe it's just from nerves. But I was curious because I honestly can't remember him being sacked. I'm sure he has been. But
yeah, he got sacked one time against Michigan State. Northwestern probably got to him more than that because they were getting to him a little bit more. That was not a great day for the offensive line in general, but they were forced to pass protect way too much. Let's see here. Northwestern sacks one. Oh, they only sacked one time. So one sack against Michigan State, one sack against Northwestern. Let's check Purdue. Let's see here. Purdue defense one. So one sack per game right now is what Iowa's offensive line is averaging.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so obviously the line has played well, but you know, maybe Petras is just he just hasn't gained that poise back there to just sit back there and, you know, like you said, go through his progression, make the necessary reads. Maybe he's just, I haven't really noticed, to be honest. It's seeming like he's rushing it that much, but
no, I think he. It just looks like he drops back and he just stares at a guy as he goes through his route.
Yeah,
and we saw that there was at least one play that I can remember off the top of my head against Michigan State where I think he zeroed in on Brandon Smith on an out simple out route, and there was nothing there. There was nothing there, and he threw it anyways, and it was knocked down. But that's a play. If you underthrow an out route or the defender jumps the route, that's a pick six. And again, I'm not saying he was laughing about that. And maybe you know he has this. I think this is where Iowa trains their kids to speak well to the media. He basically has been player or coach speak the whole time. You know, he speaks in these generalities that aren't really anything. I would love just. Yeah, well, that's what it is, and you know Iowa trains him to talk to the media that way, but it's frustrating because you hear him. I wish that Petras, what I want from a quarterback as a fan, and maybe this is what this apparently is not what Ferentz wants. What I want from Petras is to say, look, I'm confident, but I'm not playing well right now. I got to play better. I got to do better. And it seems like you just get the same routine, like, you know, give the opponent credit. You know, we didn't take advantage of it. Give them credit, though. They forced us into doing this, and we just got to keep working, got to keep grinding. It's just the same thing over and over again. You never hear anything concrete. You never hear anything that's actually got substance. It is frustrating, but you have to believe, I would think, that, I mean, these quarterbacks are spending time in the room with Ken O'Keefe on a daily basis, I would think, and that they are addressing these things, one would hope.
Well, I'm sure. You know, that's part of Iowa's identity anyways, and I think that, you know, some of that's probably changing a bit as far as players' access to the media, but as far as how they're coached to talk to the media, that's probably not really changed. So, yeah, it's hard to know what's going on. I know that's by design, but it is a little bit frustrating.
If you had to name through three games, because what's incredible is we are a third of the way through the season already. If you had to name your MVP for this entire team, who would it be 3 weeks? 3 weeks in?
That's a good question. I'm not
sure.
I've
got one for each side. I guess let's just go overall. To me, there's no question on defense. It's Davion Nixon. He's just playing like a man child right now. I didn't think he was going to take this big of a jump, but he has. He leads the country in tackles for loss per game. Special teams, Torrey Taylor. I mean, talk about a guy that I didn't expect to be this good. He leads the country in punting average. He doesn't lead the country. Let me rephrase that. He leads the Big Ten in punting average. He leads the country in punting average for any team that's played more than one game. Okay. So there's a couple guys that are ahead of him. I think they only played one game. So he's been tremendous. And then on offense, to me, it's Sam Laporta. Hasn't done anything spectacular, but he's just been rock solid. I thought Purdue and Northwestern, I know he had a couple balls go off his hands against Northwestern. I don't view those as his fault. He's been a security blanket. He's caught a lot of passes that Petrus has just rifled in there. And to me, he's been the guy on offense.
Yeah, I think Goodson's been very good. I don't know if I could name one player on special teams.
I think you could make an argument it's Torrey Taylor.
Yeah, on special teams, I might have to go with Charlie Jones. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it was the first week we saw Charlie, and you know, we were hearing about that in the summer. It wasn't summer, I guess it was fall camp, and we heard things about Charlie Jones. And you know, what's interesting about this is you wonder if Amir Smith-Marset had not gotten suspended, what would Charlie Jones' day have been any different? I mean, he was returning punts anyways. But has anybody heard it? Have you heard anything about what happened to Max Cooper?
No.
And nobody wants to ask Ferentz this. This is why I wish, well, I'm not going to say. I just don't know why. To me, I'd be asking that question because Max Cooper, I feel like, was a skilled slot guy who could probably be, I think we talked about him prior to the year, maybe a guy who'd want to retain for a sixth year, and he's just MIA right now. And I don't blame Iowa for playing Jones. I think Jones, you can see, I mean, he has got the it factor when it comes to punt returning. I mean, you have to have a special skill and a special ability. It is a special type of talent to be able to return punts, and he's got it, no question about it. And you got my text during the game on Saturday before he had the punt return for touchdown, and all I said was, Charlie Jones is a weapon. And certainly he proved that throughout the day on Saturday. How big is that? I mean, of course he had the punt return for touchdown. He had a couple other nice punt returns as well. He's got some speed, and he's obviously got vision, and just seems like a smart player. And as I was watching that game, Alex, I thought to myself, and again, maybe this is jumping the gun, but I don't think this is jumping the gun too much. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Tim Dwight. What I'm saying is when I watched that game on Saturday, I watched him, and I thought, again, I didn't know what classification he was. In fact, I could find out here. Let's see here, because I don't know. Of course, he transferred from Buffalo. Go ahead and give your thoughts. What were your thoughts on Charlie?
Well, to me, he just looked, what you did say about him being a weapon. I think if he keeps getting big chunks of yardage off punt returns, I mean, I think especially for a team like Iowa, that's going to be a huge factor, because Iowa kind of, I think more than a lot of teams, relies on field position and winning that, you know, field position battle. And you know, when you can cut off a big chunk yard, it doesn't even have to be taking it back all the way. Even when you can get a big chunk, I think Iowa will benefit from that. As far as how he looks, to me, he looks like a guy who knows what he's doing on punt returns. Like, you see some guys where, well, you think, okay, who can we put back there? Well, the answer should be somebody who knows what they're doing. It shouldn't be just be the fastest guy out there. He seems to have the vision. He seems to be comfortable being aggressive. He seems to be able to see the field set up before, you know, the ball comes down, that type of thing. And he just seems like somebody who has some experience and knows what he's doing. And he's very fast and seems to be pretty quick and is able to have vision even, you know, going down the field. So far, I mean, it's just one game, but so far, you know, he looks very promising.
Yeah. And he is a junior, but when I was watching the game on Saturday, I thought to myself, I think Iowa may have just found its Matt Vandenberg. That's the first thing I thought. I thought he reminds me of Vandenberg from a perspective of just how he plays. Seems very reliable, faster, more athletic than you would think, and reliable on punt returns. Now, Vandenberg wasn't a great punt returner, but he was reliable. Remember how bad Josh Jackson was at returning punts?
Yeah.
It is it is not for everybody. And Max Cooper was okay. Nico Reganey wasn't very good at returning punts. Great wide receiver, has his role on offense, but not a good punt returner. And I don't know what Amir Smith-Marset would be like. Maybe he'd be good, but again, it's a different skill to return kickoffs than to return punts. I just feel like, what's that?
Even returning kickoffs has its own, like some guys are just naturally good at it, and it's not necessarily, and it's usually not directly correlated to their speed. If you look at somebody like, obviously like Devin Hester was a great kick returner, but somebody like Josh Cribbs was not the fastest guy, and he was probably the best kickoff returner of all time. So there's definitely a lot that goes into it, intangibles that you can't really measure. And so far, it seems like Jones has that for punts, at least.
Well, and I don't, again, maybe we are over-exaggerating what he did. I mean, that one punt return for a touchdown, he made it look easy because he simply cut right. I think it was, he said it after the game, it was a return middle play call. But he cut right. Everybody, of course, it was a line drive, which means nobody was up to be able to even meet him. And he got ahead of steam. He cut right, and then literally everybody went over like a wave, and then he just darted left. But a lot of guys, I mean, that's a simple play. A lot of guys just don't make. They're gonna try to hit the first hole they have. Whereas, I mean, he literally created the opening by means of a simple move like that, and then he took it. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It is interesting.
He seems to me like a guy who's seen that kind of thing before. And you get that impression, like he. He just seems like he's somewhat more experienced in that.
You got to remember, he did play at Buffalo, and he had a very successful season at Buffalo before he transferred. I mean, he's very successful. So, I mean, I don't know. I look at it and I think, well, he obviously, Iowa likes him. He's right now, he's a walk-on. I think he's going to be getting a scholarship pretty soon, I would hope. But yeah, I think he, you know, if you look at his film, I think you watched some of his film at Buffalo. I mean, he didn't necessarily completely blow you away on tape, but notice he was involved with a lot of deep plays. He was involved with a lot of deep balls, and he was not necessarily what you'd consider just a slot guy. And Matt Vandenberg was kind of the same way. Vandenberg didn't take a ton of deep balls, but he was a guy that could pop the cork off a defense if need be. So I wouldn't be surprised. I was deep at receiver, but you look at Oliver Martin, he's gone. And maybe this is why Oliver decided to, part of the reason why he left, because we thought maybe it was Max Cooper. Well, maybe it's Oliver Martin, or excuse me, maybe it's Charlie Jones and Max Cooper. We assume that Max Cooper's behind. Maybe Max Cooper's got COVID. Maybe he's injured. I have no idea. Nobody's asked. I would like to know, because he was the punt returner heading into the year, and nobody seems to care now that Charlie Jones has taken over. But I just think, you know, you look at the receiving core next year, Brandon Smith is gone. Amir Smith-Marset will be gone, most likely. We're assuming these guys don't exhaust another year of eligibility, since it is a free year, and they would be able to do so if they so chose. And then you got Reganey and Tracy, but I don't know. I keep thinking about next year, and we want to focus on this year, but I keep thinking about next year with Reganey and Tracy. Does that make you nervous at all, that wide receiving core with just Tracy and Reganey? That makes me a little bit uneasy, because both guys, Reganey is not a cork off the defense type of a receiver, and Tracy's just a little small to be that. There's no X receiver when you lose Smith and you lose Amir Smith-Marset. So I just wonder if maybe Charlie Jones could become, he's not going to be Brandon Smith, but maybe he could fill that void.
Right. Yeah. I don't know that anyone's going to fill that void that we know of right now. And that's one thing, you know, a lot of people were, they were already down when Iowa lost against Northwestern, and then Smith-Marset gets suspended. And, you know, some people, I honestly don't think I had this quick, you know, knee-jerk reaction. A lot of people think, oh, we're just screwed now. And here's the thing, and I think this has been proven. You can just feel free to disagree with me, but I think Brandon Smith is clearly the best receiver on this team, and I don't think it's even close. Like, they were, a lot of people seem to be acting like Smith-Marset, well, losing him was just going to, you know, and you're forgetting you have the best guy on the team is still there. The guy who's so basically, my thoughts are, if you take away the bowl game, you know, Smith-Marset was never the guy that drew that kind of attention. Now, I think he kind of benefited from Brandon Smith's presence on the field in the bowl game and, you know, made a huge name for himself there. But to me, when you watch these guys, to me, it's Brandon Smith that's just on another level, who looks like an NFL wide receiver for sure. And as far as replacing him, you know, I don't I don't have any high hopes for that. I mean,
well, I will say it was disappointing to see Calvin Lockett enter the transfer portal. I did hear he was on the field. Are you at all concerned with being that four guys have entered the transfer portal in 2 weeks?
I don't know what to make of it. Maybe I should be. I don't know. I just don't know what to think of it.
It's part of college sports nowadays. It's just odd that it happened. I feel maybe Ferentz doesn't feel this way. I feel it's a little odd that it's happening now. Yahweh Judy entered the transfer portal, linebacker. Darren McKinney, defensive back, just entered the transfer portal a couple of days ago. Calvin Lockett entered, and also Shadrick Byrd, who we had talked about, Alex, earlier in the year. I thought he may get some time at running back this year. I mean, I don't know who's behind it. Well, actually, we do know because we saw Gavin Williams play a lot on Saturday. And look, by the way, Gavin Williams looked good. Now, I don't know how much we can read into that, but what did you think of Gavin Williams in mop-up duty there at the end? I thought he looked like a strong runner, and maybe that's what Shadrick Byrd saw and just didn't want to have to compete.
Yeah, I mean, he looks solid. I don't know if I could draw any real conclusions just from that. I think, you know, the line played really well, but he looks solid. So, you know, one thing I will mention is when the media asked Ferentz about the transfers, he gave, like we were talking about earlier, the total politician's answer that, you know, that he knows a lot more than he's letting on. And to me, it was annoying because you just continually hear that kind of answer from him. But, you know, he knows more about what's going on with these players. I can't remember exactly what he said, but did you see that interview?
I heard them ask him. I don't remember what he said. It was very unmemorable, whatever he said.
No, it was totally vague and just, you know, run-of-the-mill generic answers. So, I just don't know what to make of the transfers because I don't know anything about them, really. So
well, the Calvin Lockett, Shadrick Byrd and Calvin Lockett, obviously they're skilled players, so you're probably going to read into it a little bit more. A couple of these guys were playing. Now they're playing largely on special teams. I find it, the transfer portal interesting because remember, Davion Nixon was in the transfer portal. I mean, he entered the transfer portal and then he returned. So it is possible for these guys to come back. I don't know. I mean, some of these guys, maybe it's not. Maybe they're just not in good terms with Iowa, whether it's related to the racial claims, whether it's solely playing time. I don't know what it is. Unless they come out and say what it is, we're not going to know. But I think I read that Calvin Lockett was suited up after he entered the transfer portal. So if he was suited up, I mean, he's still on the team, and who knows if he's going to go anywhere. Calvin Lockett's a guy who I thought maybe had a chance to replace Brandon Smith. There's obviously, I always forget his name, how to say it. Quavon Matthews from Largo, Florida, I believe. He's another guy. But yeah, losing Lockett, that's big. And remember, as I type in Calvin Lockett here, Calvin Lockett was from Largo. And that's my concern right now. You lose Calvin Lockett from Largo, and that doesn't necessarily mean anything. He's 6'2", 160. So he's the guy, 6'2", 160 out of high school. He's the type of guy now listed at 183 that I would think might be a guy who could replace Brandon Smith, and he has appeared on the depth chart, although not this year. But how are you going to appear on the depth chart this year when you have Reganey Smith, Tracy, and Amir Smith Marset? Maybe Charlie Jones getting ahead of him was a factor, and he also saw Max Cooper ahead of him. I don't know, but theoretically, Cooper, Smith, and Smith Marset are all gone next year. I don't know. I don't know what it is. We can speculate till we're blue in the face. But he would have been a guy who I could see potentially replacing Brandon Smith. Quavon, let me look up Quavon Matthews here. My other concern is these guys were both from the same high school. So, again, I'm speculating. Quavon Matthews is 5'11", 165. So he's not a guy who's going to be replacing Brandon Smith's size. It's just not going to happen. So that's what's disappointing to me about losing Calvin Lockett. And, you know, maybe they get somebody else. I don't know. It's just... And who knows? Maybe Brandon Smith. Do you see any way Brandon Smith comes back for a fifth year? I don't. I mean, if he's playing this well, I don't know how your stock's. I don't know how your stock's going to go up if he has a really good year. I don't know. I don't know what the draft class looks like either.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, he's looked solid for, you know, if you take away the injury last year, the time he was out. I mean, he's just looked to me like anybody watching him, I don't think he's going to have any compunction about drafting him. I mean, he just, like, if I was an NFL scout, I'd be all over him. So, yeah, I wouldn't expect him back.
So let's see here. I'm looking at, I wonder if Cooper did have COVID. Maybe he's coming back, because I'm looking at, this is just, it's freep.com. So it's the Detroit Free Press. Okay. And this says, this was talking about I don't know why the Detroit Free Press. Oh, I guess, okay. Michigan State, duh. So it listed Max Cooper as questionable for the last game due to an undisclosed medical thing, which tells me it's COVID. Same with defensive lineman Matt Lorbeck, the transfer from Northern Illinois that we've not seen yet that I thought we may see. So maybe these guys will be back. They haven't really, again, I wish that somebody would ask Coach Ferentz about Max Cooper. We've heard that Austin Schulte and Jack Campbell will both be back this week. Now, whether they jump right into their starting roles, I don't know. Seth Benson's playing well at running linebacker. What do you anticipate there? I mean, do you anticipate Campbell just jumping right back into a starting role, a guy who really hadn't started but a lot of hype preseason, or do you think Benson will retain that role?
I guess I'd probably bet on Benson, but I'm not sure what is it with Campbell. Is he injured?
What I had heard was mono, I believe.
Oh, okay. Maybe I heard that.
They kept saying it was not COVID, but nobody else. Of course, it's funny, they'd say it's not COVID with him, but they wouldn't say about the other guys. So that tells me the other guys have COVID. Now, the other problem here is, okay, you get Austin Schulte back. Do you set Jack Heflin? Heflin's playing. Do you think Heflin's playing okay? I mean, Davion Nixon's not going to get sit. I mean, he's going to be playing almost every snap. But do you set Jack Heflin, or do you just maybe rotate Heflin and Schulte?
I could see them playing Schulte. It's kind of off topic, I guess, but are they required to disclose COVID tests to anybody? I mean, sure they are to somebody.
Well, they disclose how many they have in the athletic department. But I think because of HIPAA, they cannot, unless a player were to specifically say, I have COVID or I had COVID.
I just wondered for contact tracing reasons if they have to disclose that to, you know, off the field, get that to anybody else. But,
well, I'm sure they do within the, you know, university. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm kind of speculating on that. But
I just wonder if maybe there's another way to find that info through the university. I don't know. Other than
you want to put in a freedom of information request on Max Cooper?
Well, I just thought maybe it's somewhere in public record. I don't know. I don't know how any of that works, but maybe other than sports media, maybe there'd be some way to know, and maybe you could report on that. Get the first.
I don't think people too much. I mean, I'm really probably the only guy wondering about Max Cooper. I feel bad because Cooper has been a loyal player for Iowa, came in with Brandon Smith Marset, and has just been hardworking, from everything we know, a hardworking kid at receiver, and now he's going to graduate without really getting to play. Now, we'll see. Maybe he'll be back this week. I mean, maybe he had to sit out 21 days, and he'll be back this week. But Ferentz did not say anything about him. He did say Schulte and Campbell are back. We also don't know about the kid from Lorbeck, the kid from Northern Illinois, but he is also a transfer who they originally expected not to play, but if the free year, we thought, well, maybe he'd get some time. So I don't really know about that. I think as far as other guys on defense, Davion Nixon obviously playing like a man right now. I think my underrated guy right now, Alex, and we'll see if you agree with this. By the way, Desmond Hudson, he's the other guy that hopefully can step up. If Lockett's not going to be the guy, hopefully it's Hudson that can step up, because I think he's 6 foot. See what is he listed? He's 6'3", 210. So maybe he's the guy going to replace Smith. Anyways, as it relates to the defense, this is who I look at so far who I think has just played his tail off, and that is Zach Van Valkenburg. Your thoughts on what he's done this year so far?
Yeah, I mean, he's been kind of, whenever you hear a guy's name a lot, I guess that tells you something right there. But yeah, he's definitely been a difference maker. And this past week was really, a dominant performance, I think, on defense in general. So,
Of course, he also had the forced fumble against Northwestern and the recovery early in that game.
Yeah, I mean, as far as naming a single player, it'd be, you know, probably Nixon, I guess, but it'd be tough.
Joe Evans is getting some time. I don't think he's playing poorly. I think Noah Shannon, he's gotten some good run, and he's, from what I've seen, again, I'm not studying the defensive line or anything. He seems to be, I think the line's playing well right now. I don't know that the line played great week one, played okay week two. I thought they played really well Saturday. And then, of course, Jack Heflin's been starting alongside Golston. My guess would be Schulte, if he's full strength, he will take his starting spot back, just by how Ferentz has talked about him, and maybe rotate with Heflin. But I don't see Davion Nixon coming off the field much. And what is this thing? Davion Nixon's going to have to be a little smarter. He's mimicking the snap count for the other team. That's the second straight game he's gotten a penalty from that. Obviously, that's a result of not having a crowd. But I mean, is there any excuse for getting a third one? I mean, if he gets one this next game, what are you going to say?
I'm sure Ferentz is already unhappy. I don't know what he'd say.
Well, I mean, is he unhappy, or is it something that they've told him to do?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, that's to two straight games where he's gotten flagged for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know with Ferentz. There's some things where he's seems to be kind of stubborn on as far as rules. So I don't know if that would apply there, but yeah, it's definitely a different environment as far as not having much noise at all.
I will say, was happy to see Riley Moss get the pick six. I thought he was a guy who I didn't think had played very well through two games. Obviously played better. Did get beat on a deep ball in this game, as did Matt Hankins. Both of those guys gave up a deep ball. So something to work at on tape. But it was good to see Moss, and we're not seeing much of Julius Brents. It seems like he struggled early. I think it was the first game where he really struggled with some tackling issues. And I mean, we're not seeing a whole lot of three cornerback defensive lineups. We're seeing a lot more Kayvon Merriweather. He seems to have emerged at strong safety, which I think, Alex, heading into this year, I said, well, that'd be a huge thing if we can get Kayvon to emerge at strong, and then you keep Dane at cash, and then Hankins doesn't have to play cash. I think part of it too was Brents was not playing well, and they need Hankins back there. If Brents and Moss can't hold down the fort, they need Hankins at corner. Who else are you going to put at cash? It's got to be Belton, so we got to get somebody at strong safety. So Kayvon seems to be playing well right now. Jack Kerner had an interception in this game. Obviously, the defense was dominant. I mean, but Rocky Lombardi, something wasn't right with him. I think you and I both agree there was something going on with him. I'm talking health-wise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his one of his legs, you know, you could just see he wasn't moving right. And
well, the one play he threw, and it's almost like his legs just collapsed under him as he was throwing. I've never
his
seen
legs collapsed, and then I think it gave out twice or something on that play. I can't remember. God. I don't know why he's on the field, to be honest.
Like, I know. I texted a friend of mine here, and well, he lives down Slater, and he follows Iowa, and he was watching it, and he just texted me, said, wow. And I said back, I said, they need to get, this was like, it was like 35-0 or something. I said, they need to get Lombardi out for safety purposes. They needed to get him out. Did you feel bad? I felt bad for the kid. I really did. Now, if he had been beaten up on Iowa, I wouldn't have, wouldn't be able to stand him. But I felt bad for him after a third pick, and he's on the ground and thinking, why are you in the game? Why are they putting him in the game? Well, get him out of there. The game's over.
Commentators keep talking about, his pedigree and how much of a warrior he is. I'm like, is it his decision? Like, isn't there somebody who should be responsible in his corner for throwing him in the towel?
He was a tough, really great wrestler in Des Moines. Really good wrestler. So, I'm sure he didn't know about.
This is like, you get injured. Well, it's just a different thing. Like, it's so early in the season to be injured, and you talk about compounding something like that, that could be. And I know he played really well the week before, but I mean, you got to protect your assets, especially when it's a quarterback. I mean, it's the most important player to protect on the field. So it was kind of strange to see him in there for so long.
My biggest takeaway from this game is, again, happy about the win. They dominated. Michigan State did not play well. I think we can both agree on that. They did not. Iowa did. However, my big concern is still quarterback play. I just don't know. I'm not seeing improvement. Again, I'm beating a dead horse with this. I just worry because we're three games in. Iowa's got a receiving core they'll probably never have again. Do you think there's a chance that Sam Laporta leaves this year? Is there a chance? I'm not saying he's going to, but is there a chance he could get some draft look and decide to go?
I mean, I think there's a chance, especially if he impresses even more so. A lot of that will depend on Petras, honestly, if he develops. It seemed to me like Stanley had developed a bit of chemistry with him. So far, it's probably more on Petras' end, but we haven't really seen that, I don't think, this year. So if he starts to really, fulfill what I think is his potential, I could see him getting attention.
So that's my fear. It's just this receiving core is better than Iowa may ever have again, certainly under Ferentz, and I just worry we're watching it be wasted before our eyes. That's my concern. Yeah, you can make excuses for Petras, and I get it. No spring practice, no non-conference games. There's other factors just with how the pandemic has affected things. I just worry that things are being wasted, and I guess we'll wait and see. Rushing the football, Iowa was dominant. Tyler Goodson, 14 carries, 113 yards, averaged 8.1 a carry, 2 touchdowns, had the long run of 71 yards. Charlie Jones, 2 carries for 38 yards, both on end-arounds. Mekhi Sargent had a pair of touchdowns on 31 yards, 9 carries. Gavin Williams, 8 carries for 28 yards. Ivory Kelly-Martin, 5 carries for 10 yards. But also, Ivory Kelly-Martin had a nice 17-yard catch also in this game. Alex Padilla got couple throws in. Would you like to see Iowa, when they get their backup quarterback in there, wouldn't it have been nice to see them actually give him a chance to throw? I mean, I get the game's over, but what's the point of putting him in there if all he's going to do is hand the ball off?
Honestly, I don't know why you... I mean, obviously, I know why they put him in, but I wouldn't mind if they didn't,
Well, if they at least see if he can throw. Maybe he can throw better. I mean,
yeah, it doesn't make sense.
I don't understand
it. Like, I would honestly not mind seeing Petras just get more reps. Obviously, I understand the logic of getting him off the field, but this is such a strange, extenuating circumstance here with this year and the little amount that he's played anyways. I wouldn't.
But here's what I think they ought to have done. And Ferentz will never do this. What they should have done, they're up 49-7 with 8 minutes to go. I would give, and maybe this is just stupid, I would give Petras a series, and I'd say we're going to give every quarterback a series. We're going to give Petras a series, we're going to give Padilla a series, we're going to give Hogan a series, and we're even going to give, is it Austin Spiewak? I can't remember his name. Anyways, that's the long snapper. Who's the fourth quarterback on this team? Anybody have any idea? Who?
I don't remember.
Let's see here. This isn't really important. I don't know why I'm focusing on this. Connor Kapasak. Okay. Connor Kapasak. All right. I'd give every one of those guys a series. I'd say the game is over. I mean, you throw a pick six. You don't want to throw a pick six, but you throw a pick six, it's not going to affect the outcome of the game. All right. I would give every one of those guys, and I'd say, listen, if you can, we're going to evaluate you based on these three series. We're going to give you all, three chances. And if you can keep your drive going, and maybe they would have had to do it earlier in the fourth quarter, but if you can keep your drive going, you can continue to, go down the field. If you can't, then you're out. And I would have just seen what happened. I mean, maybe it would have been Petras. I'm sure. Maybe most people would have. It's obvious it would be Petras because he's a starter. Okay, we'll give Deuce Hogan. It's a free year. None of these guys get their red shirts burned. Just play them. I don't understand why we couldn't have seen Hogan, why we couldn't have seen Kapasak. Just give them a chance to do something. That's what's frustrating to me. Any other observations from Saturday that you want to bring out before we move on?
I feel like there's some I was going to say and I can't remember.
I mean, how dominant is Iowa rushing the football? They're averaging 6.2 a carry.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, 5.5 a carry on Saturday. I think it was 5.4 a carry against Purdue, 3.3 against Northwestern, but you average it all together, it's nearly 5 a carry through 3 games. Now, if you look at the Big Ten as a whole, a lot of teams are averaging, probably 5 or 6 are averaging 4 or 5 a carry so far. We'll see if Iowa can stay in that upper echelon, but so far, so good. We haven't seen this type of a running performance thus far. By the way, Coy Kronk got benched against Northwestern. I don't know if you noticed that. He was not playing well at right tackle. If you look back at the tape, there's a few plays where he just let his guy get right to Petras, got benched. Kallenberger came in. My understanding is that Schott and Kronk both have COVID now, so they're out 3 weeks. That's what I've gathered. I don't know that for certain, but we did not see Schott on Saturday. We did not see Kronk on Saturday. We did see Kallenberger, and we saw who's playing right guard. It'd be Banwart, I think. Boy, it's great to have the depth. I think we're seeing that. So right now, the starting lineup is, we hope, knock on wood, these guys can stay healthy. Alaric Jackson, who's playing really well right now. Left guard, you got Cody Entz, who played well. Tyler Linderbaum at center. Right guard is Banwart, and then right tackle is Kallenberger. And that group played pretty well, Alex, on Saturday without Kronk.
Yeah. I mean, talking about the guys that are out, obviously we don't know why, but I just get a feeling that we're going to have a podcast where we're going to be talking about the validity of this 21-day thing. I mean, we'll be so lucky.
Well, I'm okay with talking about that now. I was not okay talking about it 2 weeks ago. There's been data that has come out since that was first adopted from the Big Ten that says that that's unnecessary. And the new science says that that's not needed. So I agree with you now.
I hadn't seen any science that said it was needed in the first place.
Ohio State did a study. Did you look up the Ohio State study?
No.
Ohio State did a study. Read this. ABC News did a huge report on it. Ohio State did a story before this ever happened, before the Big Ten ever even came back, that said that testing was needed after the 10-day CDC period of quarantine. Testing was needed for an additional 11 days to see if there was any signs of myocarditis and inflammation on the heart. And if there wasn't, the player could come back. But they had found that a small percentage of athletes were more prone to myocarditis for a period directly following the virus. Okay, so that's why the 21-day rule came into effect. A lot of people just want to ignore that and say, "Oh, why are they going above the CDC 10 days?" Well, that's why, because they're testing for myocarditis the last 11 days. But there has been new evidence and science that has come out since then. This says it's unnecessary. Sports Illustrated did a huge special on this a week or two ago. The Big Ten needs to revise it. Wisconsin now, again, Wisconsin voluntarily canceled their 2 games. I want everybody to understand that. They were not forced to cancel against Purdue and Nebraska. That's why it's ridiculous that the Big Ten called those 2 games no contest. Should have been a forfeit. Either way, has nothing to do with Iowa, me wanting Iowa to take down Wisconsin in the West. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that they asked that the game be canceled. Okay, so they should be forfeited the game. Okay, there's just no question around. There's no way around it. Here's the deal, though. If you have enough players to play, you should be able to play. This 5% thing, I think, is ridiculous. And now, I've always thought that was ridiculous. The 21-day thing, I thought was okay because I understood why they were doing it. And now the new data, I think it's ridiculous as well. And now we just saw, I don't know if you heard this, Alex, right before we came on, we got news that Ohio State, Maryland's canceled this weekend because Maryland had an outbreak. So, and you can't make up these games. These games are gone. They're not postponed. They're gone because you started so late in the year. You've given yourself no room for error. And unless something crazy happens across college football, which it's not, I'll give you a forewarning. It's not happening because college football is running smoothly. There are games that have been postponed, but very few. The Big Ten's having as many problems as anybody. If you look at Wisconsin, they've already lost 2 games. Now you got Maryland, who's lost a game. This antigen testing that they were supposed to detect level of infectivity before it was contagious and infectious, and it would systematically eliminate the need for contact tracing because they were going to get it before it was really even infectious. Okay, the problem with that is it's not happening. Okay, look what happened with Wisconsin. You got Graham Mertz, the quarterback, gets it. Oh, and then his backups got it, and now we got a dozen other players that got it. Well, okay, unless all these guys are on a party bus, then there's something not right here. Either they're not testing correctly, the testing isn't working like the Big Ten had touted, or something else is going on. And obviously that's the case with Maryland because you shouldn't have to have, I don't know, other conferences aren't doing the antigen testing, and guess what? Other conferences are not postponing this many games per capita. Okay, the Big Ten has less games to cancel because they're having a smaller schedule. If you look at Power 5 teams across the country since September, early September, the percentage, I'd say, is very comparable to what the Big Ten has had as far as cancellations. And the Big Ten is at 3 right now, and we just finished week 3.
Yeah. As far as, so there's a few things on the 5% thing. Is so I don't know what the rules. I'm just ignorant. Is it basically a 5% infection rate, and they have to just basically shut everything down?
No, it's that's not infection rate. It's 5% of the team population.
Okay. Okay, that's what I was thinking.
5% is positive, which means the population of the team is like 140, 150 people. Yeah. But if it's 5%, then they're considered in the red, and then they would be at a situation where you'd have to cancel the game. But other conferences say if you have 53 guys, you can play, or 54 guys, you can play.
Right. Well, what's strange to me about that is I'm assuming that came from the same guidelines that public schools are following, because that's basically what they're doing in most places. I don't know if that's true, but what seems strange to me about that is that's almost predicated on the assumption that those cases are being spread within that community. Now, that's probably true for schools, is a community spread. But with the football teams, they're testing so much that you got to think that most of these cases are not coming from one player to the other, I would think. I mean, I would think it's probably from something else, and they obviously have no way of knowing, but it seems strange to me that they would do that with all the testing they're doing. Secondly, on the antigen testing, I brought this up a few weeks ago. It makes me wonder, because we're talking about sensitivity versus accuracy and false positives. Well, you could also, I don't know for sure, but I assume that that lower number of accuracy for these antigen tests also means you'd have more false negatives. So if you're just having guys testing negative who are positive at a higher rate, because that seems to be the case with antigen versus the PCR, that maybe you're just having a lot of players slip through the cracks. Maybe that's why you're seeing, and that would probably indicate more of a community spread in terms of the football team itself being the community. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the thing is. Oh, and on the myocarditis thing, so I haven't read the report, but or the study, but so are they saying that, so you have 11 days after the 10-day quarantine, are they saying that they've seen players that are having myocarditis crop up on day 7, 8, 9, or so day like 19, 20 of that, and that's why they have to keep testing?
You'd have to read the report. I don't know the exact number of when myocarditis, when the inflammation, it wasn't, it's slight signs of inflammation. And if my understanding is after 21 days, if there's no signs of any inflammation, then they're cleared to play. But you'd have to read the study. If you just search ABC News, Ohio State, myocarditis, you'll find the information.
Okay. Well, yeah, it just makes me wonder, because it's like, if you have a guy who's on day 11 of quarantine and he's got, let's say he's got some inflammation, but it's gone the next day, are they worried that it's going to come back or something? I'm just not sure. I guess I'd have to read it, but it just seems strange, just because of the other, there's such a discrepancy, and this goes for everything in the country, not just football, but so much of a discrepancy between different, leagues, different states, whatnot. And it just makes you wonder how, I think it makes people mistrustful of science in general, which is not a good thing, but there's so much, so many different guidelines all over the place that just makes you question everything naturally. So I don't know.
Weird week though ahead. Am I right in saying, what are all the, I haven't been following this. Let me just go here to the ESPN page. So let's see here. So far there's been four. Okay. A couple things. Four SEC games have been postponed this week. Alabama, LSU, Auburn, Mississippi State, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Georgia, Missouri. So that's the most we've seen. I mean, that's unprecedented so far. Now, COVID has been spiking in a lot of areas. I mean, we get that, right? It's basically everywhere it's been spiking. This is what's weird. Badgers are back on the field. The Wisconsin Badgers seem to be set to play. What I don't understand is, okay, 21-day rule. So Wisconsin doesn't play. This is what really irks me. Wisconsin doesn't play against Purdue and against Nebraska. Okay, they're still eligible for the Big Ten championship game because they've played six. If they play the rest of their games, they're eligible. Here's what we said. Remember, after Graham Mertz had tested positive, we thought, they're done. I mean, even if they play, they're not going to be able to, because they don't have Jack Cohn. He's out with a foot injury. If they don't have Graham Mertz, and then we heard that their backup, Chase Wolf, was out as well due to COVID. And we thought, well, 3 weeks, because he tested positive after the Illinois game. Okay, well, this is what came out on ESPN today. Adam Rittenberg wrote, Wisconsin quarterback Graham Mertz remains in the protocol as he recovers from COVID, but could return for Saturday's game. Badgers offensive coordinator Joe Rudolph said Wednesday that Mertz's status depends on his preparation time this week and if he gets clearance from the team's sports medicine staff. Big Ten rule states that any player who tests positive must isolate for 10 days. He tested positive the day after Illinois. Okay, so I don't understand. Can I not count? Am I not counting correctly? If he tested positive the day after the game, that was Saturday. Okay, so he played a Friday night game. Okay, that's what happened. So he tested positive on that Saturday.
What date is it?
So this would have been October 24th. He tested positive 24th. So 7, 14. Okay, so this that's funny. So this Saturday would be day 21.
Okay.
So how can he come back? Doesn't he have, would that count as the 21st day?
I don't know.
I mean, isn't this weird? I mean, I don't understand.
21.
I don't know.
Let's see. So the 24th, that would be the first day. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 17, 18, 19, 20. Yeah, so that would be 21.
Anyway, so apparently he could play this weekend. Good Lord. I mean, and I'm not rooting for him not to play. I don't know. I don't know what caused, you know, if he just got it or if he did something stupid that caused him to catch the virus. I don't know. It's just interesting. They haven't played two games. They could still win the West. They're 1-0 right now. And it's all going to come down to win percentage. Now, if they were to lose this weekend and Iowa wins, guess what? Iowa and Wisconsin have the same win percentage at 500. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. Now, Northwestern, who would you say is a favorite for the West right now? I think it's Northwestern right now, 3-0, and they're playing better than anybody.
I got to go with Iowa.
Let's be honest. Iowa, can we both agree that Iowa is not out of the West race right now? I mean, they are not at 0-2. They're not.
No. This year's everything's going to be unexpected. I expect, you know, a lot of teams that, there are some teams that look good early on and probably that'll flip flop and vice versa. So it's too early to say.
All right. Let's talk about NFL from last week. We'll recap some games and we'll make our picks for the week ahead. So this past week, the Jaguars lost to the Texans. The Raiders beat the Chargers. The Dolphins beat the Cardinals. Well, the Dolphins look good with Tua Tagovailoa and his little brother at Maryland. Boy, they 2-1, but they've got COVID now, so they're out. Steelers over the Cowboys in a kind of an ugly affair. Saints over the Buccaneers. Tom Brady got his pants pulled down on Sunday night. And then the Patriots over the Jets. Cam Newton found a way on Monday night. Vikings beat the Lions. Giants beat the Giants beat the Washington football team. Packers over the Niners. Will we see Beathard finally? I mean, good Lord, Mullins didn't look good.
Yeah. I haven't been following him closely. So.
Let's see here. Ravens over the Colts. Titans over the Bears. Bills over the Seahawks. Falcons over the Broncos. Chiefs over the Panthers. And I think that does it for last week's scores. So let's talk about this week's scores. Let's first make our picks for tomorrow night. Colts-Titans tomorrow night. Desmond King, by the way, is now a Tennessee Titan after he got traded before the deadline. So he's playing with Amani Hooker in Tennessee. Got a fumble recovery for a touchdown this past week. Who you got, Indy and Tennessee?
I'll go with Tennessee.
I like the Titans as well. Texans Browns on Sunday.
I'll go with the Browns.
I got the Browns as well. Washington and Detroit.
I will go with Washington.
I like Detroit there. Buccaneers and Panthers.
I'll go with the Bucks.
I'll go with the Panthers, but McCaffrey playing or not playing will be a big factor there. Giants, Eagles.
Eagles, I guess.
I will go with the Eagles as well. Jaguars and Packers.
I'll go with the Packers.
I like the Pack. How about Bills and Cardinals?
I'll go with the Bills.
I'll go with the Cardinals. How about the Cardinals? Remember, we interviewed Don Shumpert before the season, and he was building the hype train for Arizona. I don't think people bought into it, but they are good this year, and the Bills are too. But I will go Cardinals with the mild upset there. Chargers and Dolphins.
I'll go with the Chargers.
Got to go Miami. Broncos and Raiders.
I'll go with the Raiders.
I like the Raiders. Seahawks, Rams.
I'll go with the Seahawks.
I will go with the Seahawks as well. Bengals, Steelers.
Go with the Steelers.
This is a trap game. Bengals are playing better with Joe Burrow at quarterback, but I will go Pittsburgh to stay undefeated. 49ers, Saints.
I'll go with the Niners.
Going Niners? They don't have anybody left. That whole team is hurt. Is it going to be Beathard this week or Mullins?
I don't know. That's not a pick based on brains.
I will go with the Saints, but I'd love to see Beathard get some time there on Sunday. Ravens, Patriots, Sunday Night Football.
I'll go with the Ravens.
I'm going to go Patriots in the upset here. Cam Newton will out-duel Lamar and finally have a big day. I will go with the New England Patriots. Vikings, Bears, Monday Night Football, divisional rivalry.
I'll go with the Bears.
Vikings trending up, Bears trending down. I will go with the Vikings. And that brings us to college football. This past week, we mentioned Iowa and Michigan State, whoever they played. Iowa, Michigan State. Let's maybe recap some games. The biggest storyline was obviously Clemson losing. Number one, Clemson loses without Trevor Lawrence, its quarterback. They lose to Notre Dame on the road. And how about Notre Dame students? Did you see them storm the field? I mean, holy cow. Seriously, even I look at that thinking, crap. I mean, what are you doing? That just doesn't look good, even if it doesn't cause an outbreak. And I don't know. Now they're all quarantined on campus. What were your thoughts on the Irish storming the field? And you know, it's also putting the players' season in jeopardy when you do that.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. Was it two overtimes or something?
Yeah, two overtimes they win. Clemson, of course, didn't have their quarterback, but still an impressive win for Clemson. And their backup threw for 439, so I don't know what Trevor Lawrence would have done. Rutgers, how about Rutgers? I mean, they lost by 22 to Ohio State, but 49-27, Alex, they covered. Rutgers looks better than what they have in past years. They beat Michigan State week one. Competed with Indiana, competed with Ohio State. We'll see what they do moving forward, but I like what I see from the Scarlet Knights, Greg Schiano there at Piscataway. Another big matchup, Florida beat Georgia. Let's see, Cincinnati blew out Houston. Texas A&M blew out South Carolina. Pac-12 got underway. Oregon beat Stanford. How about this result from the Big Ten? Indiana 38, Michigan 21. And Alex, is Jim Harbaugh going to, is he on the hot seat right now? They're 1-2. They've lost to Michigan State. They've lost to Indiana. They're out of the Big Ten conversation. I think there's no question about that. Ohio State would have to, they'd have to completely turn. Michigan would have to run the table and hope that Ohio State loses somewhere else as well, which I don't think is going to happen. Is Jim Harbaugh on the hot seat?
What I think's funny is you get a team like that and their standards are so high, like coming from an Iowa fan, like maybe we'd be talking about that with Ferentz, but probably not. But it's like they have, you know, somebody like Harbaugh has a skid, and that's the conversation for the most part.
Well, let's be honest. He's also been the talk of just negative fans for the past several seasons. He's never beaten Ohio State, and they don't consistently beat Michigan State.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's kind of got through into the fire, but he knew what he was getting into, and so I could see them holding him to that higher standard. I don't know who they would want in place of him, but, you know, to me, it would be pretty, if I was a Michigan fan, I'd be annoyed probably with what I would see as premature and maybe immature speculation so far. But yeah, I don't know. I could see it happen. I mean, I could see it, him at least having his job in question. So.
Matt Campbell heard that name tossed around for the Michigan job. He's an Ohio guy. There was rumors about him for the Ohio State job when that became open. Maybe, you know, if he got turned down for Ryan Day, maybe, it's almost like Jason Day, Ryan Day, maybe he would consider going up to Michigan. Anyways, they got beat by Indiana, and Indiana's 3-0. Are they for real right now? They've beaten Penn State, Michigan, and Rutgers.
Yeah, I mean, I think they look good. So, you know, time will tell, but yeah, I think I'd say they look for real.
Oklahoma State squeaks by Kansas State, Coastal Carolina over South Alabama, Marshall blew out UMass, Iowa State in a comeback victory against Baylor. Purdy did not look good in the first half, but they find a way behind Breece Hall's 133 rushing yards. SMU beat Temple. Oklahoma blew out Kansas. USC wins at home. It would have been an upset had they lost. They do win by one against Arizona State and their first game of the year. And then Texas beat West Virginia in a close one. Liberty, you got to look up the finish. I can't even describe the finish. Liberty and Virginia Tech, look that up on YouTube later if you haven't seen the ending of that game. And then Nebraska and Northwestern. Northwestern wins by 8. Maryland beats Penn State. How about Maryland 2-1, and what is wrong with Penn State right now? First of all, Journey Brown just announced today he's retiring from football due to a heart condition. Noah Cain's already out from them. Their quarterback does not look great. All of a sudden, Iowa's schedule is much more winnable. That's why it's so frustrating they lost the first two games. But Iowa's schedule has opened up, Alex. Penn State's 0-3, Minnesota's 1-2, and Wisconsin's had all kinds of COVID problems. Those are the three games we've looked at and said they're the toughest. Maybe don't look so tough now.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's not as surprising to me as, like, if this had happened last season, I think everyone would be totally shocked. Obviously, some of it couldn't have happened, especially Wisconsin. But, you know, I think there was an element to this that should have been expected to an extent. So, like I said, though, I think some of the teams that have been playing well, I could see that flipping, depending on a lot of factors. Even if you take COVID or whatever out of the equation, I could still see it flipping. So, I think Iowa still, you know, you have to be hopeful. I think they still have, you know, they still have everything that we talked about. I think they just have to, you know, tighten up some stuff and basically just win games. But I could see these other teams, you know, Minnesota, I think, is probably going to start playing better. Hopefully not this week, but going forward. So, yeah, it's definitely been a strange, unexpected year.
Well, Minnesota did play well on the road. Now they were at Illinois. They win 41-14. Purdue and Wisconsin did not happen due to cancellation. Air Force Army was postponed. Tulsa Navy postponed. UTSA Rice postponed. Charlotte Middle Tennessee postponed. Arizona Utah. That's funny. Arizona Utah. That game was canceled. And from what I read from that, well, somebody had a few COVID cases and they both just agreed, yeah, well, let's not play. Pac-12 is a joke, I'm sorry. Florida International, UTEP was canceled. Louisiana Tech North Texas was postponed. Louisville, Virginia was postponed. Washington Cal was canceled. So yeah, there were games canceled and postponed more than normal. This week is more normal, which follows the landscape. It's been a tough month for COVID so far here in the month of November. And Alex, we're going to talk now about the matchups ahead for this week. Before we do that, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, everything's been negative, 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 negative. Everything's, oh Lord, the virus, this, and there's people out in the streets on ventilators, and it's just all bad. And yes, it's not been a good year, but can we both agree, without saying anything negative about this, we got good news this week about Pfizer's vaccine. Can we both agree on that?
Yeah.
And so we're going to see. I mean, again, it's we got about as good a news as we could hope for as it relates to a vaccine. Everybody seems to be on the same page about optimism with it, so let's just wait and see. But look, I mean, I think all of us want that to happen, and so far so good. So we'll see where that ends up. Maybe we'll be out of this sooner rather than later. Okay, let's talk about week 11.
Let me cut in for one thing. This is one concrete thing that I know it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but I called the local Walgreens pharmacy, and they are already saying how they're going to be one of the two, you know, companies that's going to be distributing the vaccine. So there's definitely plans in place, and, you know, hopefully I think everything's lining up to look like it's, you know, it's going as fast as possible. So I'm pretty hopeful with that.
90% effective. That's better than anybody ever would have thought. And
right.
I mean, even Dr. Fauci, who I think we can both agree has been more devil's advocate with this, which I mean, okay, whatever. He's been, you know, he's been the guy who said, well, we could hit this number of deaths. We could hit it. He's pretty confident. He went on CNN yesterday and was very confident that the general population will have access to this vaccine in the first quarter of 2020, which means April or earlier. I mean, that if that's not good news, I don't know what is. And we'll wait and see. Things could change, but so far so good. And boy, we need the good news. So all right, let's talk about some matchups this week. By the way, the MAC is back underway. We're not going to really talk about the MAC because they play throughout the week. There's games going on right now on ESPN and ESPNU. Maybe later in the season when teams start to establish themselves, we'll talk MAC football. But let's talk about Friday first of all. Eastern Carolina at number 7 Cincinnati, 6:30 p.m. during the Iowa game on ESPN2. Your pick between the Pirates and the Bearcats?
I'll go with Cincinnati.
I'll go with Cincinnati as well. Number 9, Miami at Virginia Tech, 11 a.m. ESPN Saturday.
I'll go with Miami.
I like Miami as well. Coastal Carolina, number 15, at Troy, 11 a.m. ESPN 2.
I'll go with Coastal Carolina.
I'll go Troy in the upset. Middle Tennessee and number 16, Marshall, CBS Sports Network, 11 a.m.
I'll go with Marshall.
I like Liberty at home here, or excuse me, Marshall at home. Western Carolina at number 22, Liberty, 11 a.m. ESPN 2.
I'll go with Liberty.
That will be Liberty as well for me, and ESPNU, not ESPN2 on that one. Skip down here, South Alabama at number 25, Louisiana, 1 p.m. ESPN Plus.
What was the last team you said?
Louisiana, Lafayette.
Okay. I'll go with them.
I'll go Louisiana as well. Number 2, Notre Dame at Boston College, 2:30 on ABC.
I'll go with Notre Dame.
I'm gonna go Boston College in the upset. I think Notre Dame's gonna be sleepwalking after the win against Clemson. Boston College nearly beat Clemson the week prior, so I will go with Boston College there in the upset. Number 20, USC at Arizona, 2:30 p.m. on Fox.
We'll go with USC.
I got USC as well. Number 11, Oregon at Washington State, 6 p.m. on Fox.
I'll go with Oregon.
I like Oregon as well. Arkansas at number 6, Florida, 6 p.m. ESPN.
I'll go with Florida.
Ooh, Arkansas on the upset here. Number 19, SMU at Tulsa, 6 p.m. ESPN 2.
I'll go with SMU.
I like SMU as well. Skip down here. We'll skip past the Big Ten for now. I mentioned some games canceled or postponed. Alabama, LSU has been postponed. Ohio State, Maryland canceled. Texas A&M, Tennessee postponed. Georgia, Missouri postponed. Auburn, Mississippi State postponed. Memphis Navy postponed. Air Force, Wyoming canceled. UL Monroe and Arkansas State postponed. More games, well, actually not than last week, but more bigger games, Power 5 games were canceled or postponed. But notice the only game that was canceled from Power 5? Big Ten. Because they left themselves no room for error. So that'll be a shame to themselves, I think. People want to put them up on a pedestal and, you know, act holier than thou when it comes to Big Ten. You know where I stand with it. So I don't think that's what happened at all, but got to move on. So let's talk Big Ten football for this week. First of all, well, the first game is Iowa-Minnesota, but we'll come to that last. What about Saturday's matchups? Number 10, Indiana at Michigan State, 11 a.m. ABC. Can Rocky Lombardi get his health back, get his swagger back, and upset another top 10 team? Boy, if they could get an upset against Indiana, it'd be about the weirdest start in the world. You lose to Rutgers in Iowa, but beat Michigan and Indiana twice in 3 weeks. Who you got, Hoosiers and Spartans on Saturday?
Well, I don't know what's going on with him health-wise, but I think either way, I'm going to go with Indiana.
I like Indiana as well. And boy, 4-0, and they're a top 10 team. When's the last time you could say that as an Indiana fan? Impressive start for the Hoosiers. Illinois at Rutgers, 11 a.m., Big Ten Network.
I'll go with Rutgers.
I got Rutgers as well. I think they'll win another Big Ten game. Illinois does not look good. They've had some COVID issues at quarterback with Brandon Peters out. I think he's still out this week. I will go with the Scarlet Knights. Penn State at Nebraska, 11 a.m. FS1. This should be an entertaining game. I can't imagine Penn State falling to 0-4, but, I mean, Nebraska, I could see them winning this game at home.
I'll go with Penn State.
I've got Penn State as well, but a close one. Number 13, Wisconsin at Michigan. And if you're an Iowa fan, this and the Northwestern game, I think, are the two other games you're really watching this week. But let's talk about Wisconsin-Michigan first. In Ann Arbor, we know the struggles for Wisconsin to get back on the field due to COVID. Michigan has had struggles in general. Maybe Harbaugh playing for his coaching career at Michigan. 6:30 p.m. ABC. It's going to be a widely hyped game. And boy, I think a lot of fans, Iowa fans or not, are going to be watching this. It's national television, Saturday night football. And certainly if Wisconsin were to lose, that helps Iowa, no question about it. Who you got, Badgers and Wolverines?
I'm going to go with Michigan.
I've got Michigan as well. Now, we'll see. Graham Mertz plays. I could see them winning. If he doesn't play, I can't see them winning with Chase Wolf or Danny Vandenboom.
Now, what time is that on Saturday?
6 p.m. on 6:30 on ABC.
Okay.
And then the other game that evening that will be interesting, I'll have to flip back and forth, number 23 Northwestern at Purdue, because both these teams are undefeated and they're in the West. So these are technically the teams. There's three teams undefeated right now in the West: Purdue, Wisconsin, Northwestern. One team's played three games, one team's played two games, and one team has played one game. But they're all undefeated, and this will be an interesting one to fall. And I think if you're an Iowa fan, you're probably rooting for Purdue. Am I wrong? I mean, yes, they lost to Purdue, but I think Northwestern is probably better.
Yeah, I think so.
So who you got, Boilermakers, Wildcats, on Saturday?
I'm going to go with Northwestern.
I will go with Northwestern as well, but rooting for Purdue as an Iowa fan. 6:30 p.m. on Big Ten Network, and as I mentioned, Maryland playing host to Ohio State. That could have been a fun game. Unfortunately, it won't happen. Canceled due to COVID. So Iowa, Minnesota. Alex, this is the first Friday night game we've had in... Have we ever had a Friday night Big Ten game? I mean, besides maybe a bowl game, we've seen Black Friday afternoon games, but when's the last time we've seen an Iowa game on a Friday night?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be strange. It's on FS1, is that right?
Yes, Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, go ahead.
So yeah, 6 p.m. Central Time. This Friday, 2 days from now. It seems like just yesterday they were playing Michigan State. So quick turnaround, but Iowa had a short week last week too because they didn't practice on the 3rd due to Election Day. And so, I mean, if you look at the stats, Alex, Minnesota is far and away the worst rushing team in the Big Ten thus far. No, they're not the worst rushing team. They're the worst rush defense. They're allowing like over 7 yards per carry, which is just astounding. Their defense is bad right now. In fact, their last game against Illinois, they only gave up 14 points. But if I'm not mistaken, let me look at the real quickly at the Wisconsin stats here. Or excuse me, Illinois stats. Illinois still averaged 5 yards per rush last week, Alex. So now Minnesota averaged 7 per rush. Their rush offense is very good. Ibrahim had over 200 yards on the ground for the second straight game, 4 touchdowns on 30 carries. He's a workhorse. And I think I talked about him, Alex, preseason. I said Ibrahim's a stud. Now, Tanner Morgan at quarterback hasn't been the guy I expected him to be. Let's hope it's not this week that he emerges. But Rashad Bateman, obviously, is an NFL draft pick, a first-round draft pick next year. He had 10 catches for 139 yards and a touchdown this past week. But Iowa should be able to run the ball. If they can't run the ball against Minnesota, either Minnesota has made some drastic changes that have worked quickly, or Iowa's got issues. So with that being said, that's the one stat that pops out to me. Obviously, Minnesota can put up points, but they've had problems keeping teams off the board. We know they lost to Maryland in overtime, giving up 45 points. They gave up nearly that, I think, right around there, 48, something like that, to Michigan week one. And, of course, Michigan hasn't looked good since. So what are your thoughts on Minnesota? Where do they stand right now on your radar?
I'm not sure what to make of them. I'm kind of leery just because I feel like we're probably going to have a correction. It's just kind of a stock market term, but I have a feeling they're going to step up here. Like I said, I hope it's not this week, but I don't see this continuing, especially on defense. I'm not sure as far as actually if you had to, you know, if I had to bet money on what's going to happen. This game, I've been, I don't know, I've kind of changed my mind on it, I guess. I think a lot of people have, but I'm not sure where to place my bets on this one. Yeah, I'm just not sure. I'll let you make the pick first because I'd rather hear what you have to say first.
Well, first of all, I'm going to give keys to the game. Obviously, you got to run the ball. That's I don't know how you go away from that key. I think every game is from here on out is going to be, can Petrus improve game to game? That's going to be my key for the rest of the season. For this game specifically, I think Iowa's got to get 250-plus yards on the ground. I mean, this defense, now that seems like a lot. Usually Iowa's mark is 100 yards. If they can get 100 yards, they win. But Minnesota can put up points, and Iowa's going to have to stop the rush. I don't think they're going to stop the rush, but if they can keep Ibrahim to around 100 yards, 150 yards, the max, that seems like a lot. Probably 100 yards is a better goal. I think probably the key for me right now is just be able to keep the line healthy and keep running backs healthy, because Iowa's going to have to – that's where they're going to have to win this game. They're just going to have to absolutely shove it down Minnesota's throat, so to speak, on the ground. And if they can get over 200 yards rushing, I have a hard time seeing them lose, because I don't see Iowa giving up 224 yards to Ibrahim. He's not Saquon Barkley. He's not Christian McCaffrey. He's not Le'Veon Bell. He's not some of Ezekiel Elliott, some of the other Big Ten running backs that Iowa's had problems with. He's not Melvin Gordon. So he's a workhorse. He carries the ball a lot. But I think if they're able to corral him, it's going to probably come down, at least on defense, it's going to come down to how does Iowa secondary play? Can Moss, I mean, this is going to be a tough matchup because I don't think Moss has played all that well this year. Can Moss and Brents and Hankins stay with Bateman and Ottenbell? And, I mean, they've got talent. Minnesota's offense is loaded. Tanner Morgan's not played great. But I think the key is you limit Ibrahim. You make Tanner Morgan beat you. And if he beats you, fine. But we're not going to give you the ball much because we're going to control the clock on the ground. And I think we could be in store for a high-scoring game. Every time we seem to say that, Alex, it ends up being a low-scoring game, it seems like, every year. So I would say right now, pound, pound, pound the rock, just like they did against Michigan State. And I like their chances as of right now.
Yeah. Overall, I'd agree. I mean, I think that, like I said, I'm not totally sure on where Minnesota stands. I'm kind of leery that maybe we're going to see this be their breakout game. I hope that doesn't happen, but I think I really have to go with Iowa just from a non-biased perspective. Also, I think that they, you know, they looked really good. And obviously, Michigan State, like you said, didn't play well, but I think they looked really good. You can't take away from, especially what the defense did and special teams. Yeah, I think, you know, Iowa kind of plays a style where as long as they don't get gouged, they can usually, bend enough to, what's the right word, kind of keep the game from getting away from them, I guess. And I think that they should be able to do that. Even if they do give up some yards on the ground, as long as they don't get gouged big time, I think they are in pretty good shape. Iowa's going to be getting back Smith Marset, correct?
Yeah, he should be back.
So, I'm hoping Petrus has a. I'm hoping this is his game to kind of break out. I think this is when it would happen. Like if you ran a parallel universe, you know, or simulation or something where you could run two football teams. If you told me that, well, he was going to have a breakout game, this is probably the game I would bet on. If that makes any sense, just because of the timing of it. You would have hoped it would have been earlier, but I could see it happening this game. So
just a quick note, Illinois' quarterback now, I think this is either their second or third string quarterback, was like 6 of 17 on Saturday. Now again, not their starter, but didn't have a good game. Now the week before, Talia Tagovailoa had 394 yards. Now it was an overtime. They beat Minnesota, but 394 yards on 26 of 35 for 3 touchdowns. Now, he's also more of a running quarterback, so that opens things up a little bit. Iowa does not have that luxury. You look at game one against Michigan, they also gave up a lot of yards to Milton, but they also gave up a lot of rushing yards. I mean, teams like Maryland just put up a ton of yards against Minnesota. But I mean, look at Milton, 225 yards, one touchdown, 15-22, pretty efficient. So they're giving up plays on the ground, but they're also setting up play action, it looks like, just from the naked eye. I haven't really watched. I watched part of that first game. I watched highlights of the Maryland game. And I have not yet looked at the Illinois game. I'm going to watch highlights of that before the game Saturday. This is a defense that can be taken advantage of, but the key is going to be you got to establish the run. And I think that's what's going to make Petras, if anything is going to get him going, it's going to be play action, take a couple shots, and maybe give him some confidence.
Yeah. This will be an interesting game because I think I just have a feeling that, you know, Petras, if he gets going, I think this is going to be a kind of a landmark game either way. I mean, if he has another game where he's just not, things are not clicking, and he's just not able to connect, I think we're going to be, I will be a little bit more negative next week, or a lot more negative. I could definitely see this game being a turnaround game. Either way, I think it's an important game. I mean, it's going to be important anyway, because Minnesota is an important team whenever you play them, even if they haven't been up to expectations this year. But, you know, they're still there, and so is Iowa. So I think this is a big game, and it's not one that they can afford to lose, in my opinion. So
a couple quick notes. Iowa, third overall right now in the Big Ten in total defense, sixth overall in total offense. If you look at individual subcategories within that, let's go to rushing yards. Iowa sixth in the conference right now in total rushing success. Right now they're actually fifth in average. They're averaging 5.0 yards per rush, only behind Michigan, Minnesota, Maryland, and Nebraska. What's interesting about that, Michigan is 1-2, Minnesota is 1-2, and Nebraska is, I think, 1-1? No, they're 0-2. So that's kind of an odd stat. And then the only other team is Maryland at 2-1. So that's why got to wait for Iowa to see if they can continue this trend. Because look at the teams who are at the bottom of offensive total rushing. Ohio State's below Iowa. Northwestern's below Iowa. Wisconsin's below Iowa. Penn State, Purdue, Indiana, and Michigan State. It's kind of an odd number, so let's just wait on that. Defensively, Iowa is number one in rush defense, which that almost surprised me, especially with how badly they played against Horvath in the second half of that Purdue game. But right now, they lead the conference. They're allowing 2.6 per rush, which is tremendous. So,
what do they like to know if that is over the last two games? Then,
there was 3.3 against Northwestern, and I don't think Michigan State did much. Sure. Passing though, this is the scary thing. Iowa right now is ninth overall in passing, and I think they should be top five. But at least with this core, they should be top five. They are ninth overall in passing. On defense, they're third against the pass overall. Defensive efficiency, they're third overall. Offensive efficiency, Iowa's dead last. That's a problem. They're 14 out of 14. That's a problem. Okay, you're not going to win the West doing that. And that falls on Spencer Petras. Kicking, punting, I think there's no surprise here. Iowa number one, and it's not even close right now. I shouldn't say it's not even close. It is close. Iowa and Wisconsin are tied for 46 apiece, but Wisconsin's played one game. Iowa's played three, and Iowa actually leads in net overall. Net punting, which is actually the stat that's more indicative, at 46.5, which is actually a higher net punt average than their just punt average, which I find interesting. You don't often see that in that order. We saw Keith Duncan miss a kick, so maybe he got one out of his system on Saturday. That's basically it. I think Iowa's got a chance to exploit Minnesota. If you look at rush defense, Minnesota is dead last right now. Listen to these averages. Iowa averages 2.6 against the rush. Holds their opponent 2.6 yards per rush. Rutgers is 2 at 3.1. Michigan 3.2. Penn State 3.5. Indiana 3.7. You go down all the way down. Number 13 is 5.2. That's Wisconsin, which is shocking. At number 14 is Minnesota at 7.3. Okay. So they can't defend the rush, at least three games in, and Iowa should be able to exploit that. There's no question. Now, the problem is Minnesota is also number three in the conference in total rush average, which is higher than Iowa. The good news is Iowa has a defense that should be able to at least hold them down, which I've been impressed so far. I thought without Schulte, without Campbell, we'd see, especially after that second half against Purdue, but they've done pretty well against a Northwestern team that ran a lot. Iowa didn't really give up that much to them and certainly didn't give up anything to Michigan State. So any final thoughts on the game on Friday?
No, I just hope they win. I mean, I think they're set up pretty well going into it. I think their run game's been really solid. One thing I didn't mention earlier that I liked is seeing Kelly Martin, you know, have a positive game. I think that's not necessarily needed, but it's really nice to see. I mean, you already have two guys, you know what you're going to get. And Kelly Martin's been kind of a question mark. We just haven't really known where he's at, I guess, but he's, you know, stuck around and had a good game. So I feel like they're pretty well set up. You know, Minnesota, as of so far, you know, are not set up well to play against a team like Iowa. So hopefully Iowa can just, you know, march down the field and get first downs. It's really the most important thing Iowa's got to do is just always convert first downs. When they start punting a lot, it's really when they get into trouble, in my opinion. So I think they will. I mean, the numbers definitely work. And what we've seen so far, hopefully Petras won't be leaned on heavily. I mean, I want to see him get reps, obviously, but hopefully he won't have to do much throwing. And I think if that's the case, then I think Iowa, I'm pretty comfortable with Iowa winning this.
One more thing. Why did Iowa throw the ball 51 times against Northwestern?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I've kind of seen that trend, and it almost seems kind of
stupid.
Well, yeah, but
they abandoned the run. They abandoned the run against a team. They were up 17-0. They led the whole game, and they abandoned the run in that game.
I've probably said this before, but I've mentioned how some of the trick plays by Iowa seem like token plays.
Which you notice they were going to run. You notice that fake field goal they were going to run this week? And it was the same play. Remember, they ran it to Hawkinson, but the problem was Michigan State called that timeout, and right, they couldn't do it because remember he saw it was the toss play over to the tight end, Laporta, from the center. Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, with the passing, if that's just kind of a, you know, because there's so much talk, especially this year, about wide receivers, if it's just kind of a way to placate, I can't imagine Ferentz doing this, but kind of a way to placate fans and media as far as, well, you're not using your guys. Well, we tried it, and it didn't work, you know.
Well, I think he was pretty pissed off after the game on against Northwestern as to why the team threw that many times, and I think he probably check that with Brian Ferentz.
Yeah.
Man, well, it's ridiculous.
You know, another thing I was going to say, and obviously Petras has things to improve on, but I think one thing he's also going to have to improve on is reading the field before the snap. So, you know, reading blitz. I've seen so far an unfortunate number of run plays that just are totally favoring the defense. And you know, some of that's the quarterback's responsibility to see what's coming. And I know he's a young guy, but I think he's going to have to be better in that area too.
There was some plays on Saturday that I was impressed with that looked almost Wisconsin-esque where they loaded the box and it didn't matter. Iowa ran right through them.
Yeah, I don't mean this past game. They looked pretty good this past game. It was, I think, against Northwestern. I was noticing that and probably Purdue a little bit. But so, yeah.
Okay, give me a final score. This could very well be a shootout. I mean, I don't think anybody's arguing Minnesota's got weapons everywhere. Ottman Bell, Bateman, Ibrahim, and a experienced quarterback.
Yeah, I'll go Iowa 31, Minnesota 21.
I'm going to go Iowa 35, Minnesota 28. I think Iowa, I'm hoping they 35 is not that much. I mean, come on. They can score 35. Thinking Maryland, Michigan scored like 48. So Iowa should be able to put up 35. And if they don't put at least 30 up, I'm going to be disappointed. Now, if they can win 20-17, it is what it is. But I think this defense is vulnerable. But we shall see what we shall see. Iowa, Minnesota, Friday night, this Friday, the 13th, at 6 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, ESPN's FBI makes me a little nervous. Has Iowa 64.3% chance of winning the game on the road up at Minneapolis, which I think heading into the season Certainly would not have been the case. I don't think many people expected Iowa to win this game. Iowa is favored by 3.5, also makes me very nervous. Over-under is 58, which is a little bit low, I think, for these two teams. But Iowa also hasn't really, until this last game, they'd scored 20 in their first two games. So I get it. All right, that should do it for week 135. We will talk to you next week. And next week, we're going to do our official preseason basketball show. Iowa basketball is back. Media Days was just this past Monday. And we are, what, 2 weeks away, Alex, from the start of college basketball, which is amazing. And so we're gonna break it down next week on our preseason show. We'll talk a little bit of Iowa football. Hopefully it's a win. And we'll spend the rest of the show talking Iowa basketball. For Alex Bratta, I'm Corey Bratta. Thanks for joining us. Week 135. Watch Iowa, Minnesota this Friday, 6 p.m. Central Time on FS1. Iowa looking to improve to 2-2. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks.